Hello and welcome back to Life on the Wrist. Hope you all are doing well. Today we've got two new watch releases we're going to talk about that have come out in the last week, I guess since we last recorded a podcast. Some two quite interesting pieces, I think. One significant for USA and watchmaking that comes out of the USA. And the other, a really great continuation of a watch that's really done well and been admired by collectors for the last 10 years. We'll then get into some vintage watches that we'll be covering on lifeonthewrist.com. We've got five new pieces in. Super excited about jumping into each of these watches more in depth on our YouTube channel and writing the articles about these pieces. So stay tuned for that and be sure to check out the YouTube channel as well as lifeonthewrist.com and the editorial section of that of our website for these pieces. As always, I'll leave links in the show notes for you to see all of the things that we discuss. So if you want to see some of the pictures of the watches we talk about, be sure to head to the show notes to see that. So we'll start off with Bulgari. Bulgari released two limited edition pieces. The first is the Bulgari Octofinissimo Automatic Sketch, and the second is the Bulgari Octofinissimo Chronograph GMT Sketch. Essentially, what Bulgari has done is they've taken their incredibly iconic Octofinissimo and played around with a dial. And what they've done is essentially sketched out what the movement would look like on the dial side. So that's kind of an interesting concept to think about, but basically what they've done is, in kind of rough sketch design, put the design of the movement onto the dial. This is obviously a way of introducing or another way of kind of defining what skeletonized would be considered, because it's kind of what you would be looking at if you saw the watch movement. And so there's an automatic sketch with just the Octofinissimo with the automatic movement. And then they also did it with their Chronograph GM team and sketched that on the dial of the pieces as well. It's a cool concept, limited editions. So 280 pieces in steel of the automatic sketch, 70 pieces in rose gold. And then the Chronograph GMT sketch, there'll be 140. All of them are going to be in stainless steel. So a cool sort of iteration on the Octofinissimo, a nice limited edition, and I'm sure it'll do pretty well. I like the fact that they didn't just sort of, there's playfulness in the sketch. So as an example, if you look at the automatic, it actually talks about, it says Côte de Genève, it has arrows pointing to the rubies, and it feels almost like a rough sketch, and I think that concept of not taking it too seriously and allowing for some you know, creativity slash, you know, kind of first draft nature of what it kind of looks like, I think makes it playful and makes it an enjoyable piece for those. And it's not so serious where you feel like you're being too serious with your watch collecting. This is in celebration of the 140th anniversary, so that is one of the things that you'll see on the case backs of these watches. There is a date range describing the years that they've been in business. The next watch I wanted to kind of discuss was a watch that was really, I think, teased on Instagram really well, and I think it's an incredible piece, combining a lot of the things that I really love in watchmaking, and it also takes into consideration two really well-known watchmakers that have contributed to some of the watches that I really, really love. So the watch that I'm talking about is the Fleming Series 1 that comes to the mind of young American founder Thomas Fleming, a collector who began dreaming of founding his own brand during the pandemic. And what the watch essentially is an incredibly beautiful dress piece that's 38.5 millimeters in diameter, with basically a three-part case, a brushed top and bottom surfaces, a polished case band, and a skeletonized opening in a horn-shaped lug. The watch comes in tantalum. There's 25 pieces of those. Rose gold with 7 pieces, and then 9 numbered pieces in platinum. What's really incredible about this piece is it really combined a lot of really well-known, I guess now well-known watchmakers. So I'll start with the movement. The Calibre FM01 was developed by a renowned independent watchmaker, Jean-François Mojon, and his team at Chronod. It's a really beautiful movement, hand finishing and semi-skeletonized bridges and barrels. It's got a 7-day power reserve, which is really exceptional. What I love about the inclusion of Jean-François Mojon in this collaboration is that he's worked, you know, on many other pieces that are quite legendary at this point. The LM1, the LM2, that he did with Kari Voutilainen, as well as the Harry Winston Opus. There's many, many others that he kind of collaborated on. So it's nice to see his inclusion on this piece, and I think he brings an incredible wealth of experience to this piece. If you look at the dial, you've got these kind of concentrical circles, as well as a subsidiary seconds dial. Hours, minutes, seconds are the complications you see on this piece. If you move over to the dial, the hand-directed dial was actually made by Comble Mine, which is owned by master watchmaker Kari Voutilainen, another person who contributed extensively to many of the early MB&F pieces. The rose gold watch has a mix of hammering on the inner dial and running second sub-dial and a hand guilloche outer ring. The platinum models are solely done in a hand-turned guilloche. And then the tantalum models will have a dial with a mix of frosted platinum and dark blue aventurine. It's really cool that Fleming has kind of combined the incredible insights of, or incredible abilities and insights of, two incredible watchmakers, two incredible parts of watchmaking, and it's really exciting that that's coming out. As I mentioned, this Fleming is a US-based company, and it's really cool that US watchmaking is kind of coming to life, and to do it so well like this really is a great step forward for, I think, US watchmaking. So a big congratulations to Fleming, to Thomas Fleming, for this incredible piece. Been following it on Instagram, and I think it's gotten a lot of the great respect and admiration that it deserves, and I can't wait to actually see these pieces in person, because I think it will give things a different perspective. Now, moving on to 5 of the pieces that dropped yesterday on lifeonthewrist.com and will be covered in the editorial section of our website as well as on our YouTube channel. 5 really cool pieces, all from different brands, all sporting their own unique sides to watchmaking. So I'll kind of start off with the Rolex Oyster Perpetual Reference 6549. This is a really, really cool piece from Rolex from 1958. If you don't know, the Oyster Perpetual is one of the most iconic, important, and influential models Rolex has ever produced. The watch has a stainless steel case that's in pretty good condition. There's definitely signs of wear and polishing. What's really cool about it is it has this really nice engine-turned bezel that gives it a unique look. The lugs do show signs of polishing, as I mentioned, and what's nice is that the white dial of this watch has patinaed over time into sort of a warm hue, and it really makes it an attractive-looking piece. The Oyster Perpetual is just an hours, minutes, and center-seconds complicated piece, so it's not... it's nothing too, you know, crazy, but a really nice example. It's 30 millimeters in diameter, so it's probably not for everyone, but at 30 millimeters, it can kind of go between a lot of the things that you would want in a vintage watch, and I think for 1958, it looks incredible. It does come on a riveted bracelet, which I think obviously is correct for the time, and wearing it is really, really a pleasure. I think these oyster perpetuals are criminally underappreciated, and 30 millimeters is becoming a little bit more fashionable now, and I think it's a wonderful piece to wear on the wrist, especially running on the caliber 1161 movement, which is a workhorse and a great representation of what Rolex was doing during this time period. Speaking of workhorses, I'll move on to the second piece, which is from Bulova. This is a really, really cool mil-spec piece. It's the MIL-W-3818A US military watch. This piece was, if you don't know, military watches, those are some of the best watches to actually collect because their histories are easily tracked. Because of their histories and easily tracked provenance. This 3818A watch was produced for general purpose use by the US Army, Navy, and Air Force. This watch was specifically manufactured in 1962 based on the M2 marking on the movement. The watch has a stainless steel case in, if I must say, excellent condition with little to no signs of polishing. The lugs are really, really thick, really sharp. They're super long and make this 32 millimeter case wear a lot larger. You can see the brushed finishing really clearly on this case, and it's extremely beautiful. The watch has this really large unsigned crown, which again is super, super clean. It's got an incredible black dial with printed dial text, including a 24-hour display for the time. It's not 24 hours in total, but what you have is 1 to 12 around the outside, and then 13 to 24 on the inside. And so it allows you to describe time in 24 hours. The watch has really beautiful cathedral hands that have luminescent material still present on them that have aged nicely and match the hour indices for the 1 to 12 markers. The watch runs on the caliber 10 BNCH manual wind movement, and really it's an incredible piece of watchmaking history. It's an incredible piece of sort of military history, and I think having that inscription on the back about how this watch was issued, I think it makes it that much more special. There's a really great article on Hodinkee talking about how military watches are a great place to collect because it's easy to track sort of the provenance, and you do look for certain things related to it. And I think this is a great example of exactly that. As always, like I mentioned, there'll be links in the show notes if you want to check out pictures of this watch, and I really highly recommend you do that while we talk through each of these vintage pieces. Moving forward, we're going to look at Universal Genève with the reference 21222. This is a 34mm stainless steel watch from 1940. Universal Genève is a company that true watch enthusiasts love to see, research, and own. I think they've become extremely popular in the last couple of months with the announcement that Universal Genève was purchased by Breitling. And so I'm sure that the popularity of these watches are going to grow over the next couple of years as we anticipate the release of Universal Genève's first piece. As I mentioned, the watch was manufactured in 1940 and has a stainless steel case in very good condition. The watch has very few signs of polishing, but does show signs of wear, which is as to be expected with a watch that was worn and loved from the 40s. The lugs are long and sharp, with three angles of polish still visible, and that's an indication to me that there hasn't been a lot of polishing on this watch. Otherwise, these lugs would likely be rounded. The watch has an unsigned crown, likely a replacement from the original just based on the fact that the case is stainless steel, and the crown has this sort of gold color to it. The watch has a white dial that has a beautiful patina. That's, you know, literally if you want to think about patina, how people would describe patina, it's exactly what you're going to be looking at. The watch has hour markers and a seconds track around the outside of the watch dial that are printed. The blued hands are likely a replacement or have been relumed due to the color of the loom being different than that of the dial. That's my assumption, just based on the way that the watch looks. The watch runs on the famous caliber 263 manual wind movement. That's incredibly put together and a really nice watch to look at. This is a 34mm quintessential vintage time-only piece that is hard not to love. The penultimate watch that we want to talk about is from Omega. This is an Omega Genève Automatic Reference 166.002. This, again, is a 34mm piece, similar to the Universal Genève from 1967. I think it's the quintessential Omega, and the best way to sum up this specific piece. The watch, like I said, was manufactured in 1967 and has a gold-filled case that's in good condition. The case has a little bit of oxidation on the right side of the case, which I think is quite attractive, and has signs of wear and polishing. The lugs are short and angled towards the watch, which make it sit quite firmly at 34mm on the wrist. It's got an unsigned crown, so that means it's likely a replacement from the original, given that Omega signed their crowns during this era. The dial of this watch is kind of this white sunburst dial that has patinaed from age and has some really nice sort of spotting to it, and has applied hour markers, Omega logo, and a date window at 3 o'clock. The watch runs on the caliber 565 movement, which is a really cool caliber. The way that you can actually adjust the date is by pulling it out and pushing in the crown, which is, I think, a unique functionality and a nice complication to have. Not only is Omega an incredible brand to collect because of their variety, they did create movements like these 565 movements that had really unique ways of expressing complications or adjusting complications. And I think the 565 with the crown being the way to adjust the date is a nice example of that. Last but not least, we are going to be talking about Gerard Perregaux, a really beautiful Seahawk reference 7901. Stainless steel watches are super, super fun to collect because of their variety. I think stainless steel watches have become super popular, especially in the sports genre. Maybe not as much recently because of sort of the move away or the lowering in prices of stainless steel sports watches, but there still are vintage steel watches out there that deserve to be spoken about. The Seahawk for Gerard Perregaux is one of the classics, similar to what the Seamaster and Datejust are for collectors. This Gerard Perregaux was manufactured in the 1960s. Like I mentioned, the watch has a stainless steel case and is in good overall condition. The case does show signs of age with some scratches throughout. The bottom right lug has a larger scratch on it, which is visible in the pictures on lifeandthirst.com, so you can see it there. The watch features these rectangular lugs that are quite long and flare fairly straight and flat from the case, which make this 34mm case sit a little bit larger. The watch has an unsigned crown, but really an easy crown to use for this piece. The white dial has a light hue of patina with large applied hour markers on it, and the watch runs on the caliber GP12.4 manual wind movement, which I think is a really beautiful movement to look at. The patina on the dial of this watch is really cool, and you can see the spots where the patina has developed and other spots where the patina is slowly but surely coming into existence. And so it's not completely that sort of light brown color that you would expect from watches that have developed patina over time, but it's slowly kind of turning, and I think that is an attractive quality about this watch because it is a subtle patina, and I think allows for collectors who are looking for subtle patina to also enjoy this piece. So those are the five pieces: Rolex, Bulova, Universal Genève, Omega, and Gerard Perregaux. Those are the brands that we're going to be covering and the watches that we will be talking about on lifeandthirst.com as well as on our YouTube channel. As I mentioned, there'll be links in the show notes to both the watches that we discussed that were new releases as well as the vintage pieces that we just finished up discussing. So be sure to go to the show notes and you can click on the links to see the pieces in the metal while we talk about them. If you are new to Life on the Wrist, be sure to follow this podcast and share it with a friend who might be interested in a watch podcast. We'd love to have you as part of the Life on the Wrist family. If you wouldn't mind rating this podcast, it does help me out, and it gives me feedback on things you want to hear for this podcast. If any of these topics caught your attention and you want to message us, be sure to head over to lifeofthewrist.com. You can go to the contact section of our website, Or you can go to any of our social medias and send us a message there. We'd love to talk about watches with you. With that said, guys, I hope you have a great rest of your week, and until next time.